Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popak. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people from all walks of life to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. My guest this week is Shira Rubinoff, a cybersecurity executive and advisor. She's built two product companies, leads numerous women in technology initiatives, and was named one of New Jersey's best 50 women in business. In her male-dominated industry, she hasn't just broken the glass ceiling, she's shattered it. Shira's story of dedication and perseverance, plus her expertise in how you can stay cyber safe, is next.
This is Common Denominator, straight up conversations with Moshe Popak. Now, here's Moshe.
Hi, Shira. Welcome to Common Denominator.
Thank you, Moshe. Pleasure to be here.
Shira, I'm really excited to talk to you about cybersecurity, especially nowadays where cybersecurity is becoming more and more relevant as society is becoming more tech heavy. But what drew you specifically towards cybersecurity?
That's a great question, a very loaded question as well. My background is actually in psychology and business. And I started my career having further degrees in psychology and started off by going into organizations, making them more run more smoothly, more on the organizational dynamics, and actually practiced as a psychologist for a couple of years. I was always very entrepreneurial and was very interested in technology and more so the human factors of technology, which leads into the cybersecurity world, and launched the first company back in 2004, which was multi-factor and site authentication company. Basically, it does the security behind the scenes when you do any online banking and things like that, but really dealing with the human factors piece of it. And my career kind of took off from there, becoming an advisor and consulting to all sorts of startups around cybersecurity and the different human factors pieces of that. And I've been consulting and advising to later stage startups, some Fortune 100 and 200 companies, and been a global keynote speaker around the world in cybersecurity. It's been a quite interesting and a very wonderful field.
That's really an impressive journey. Now that you've been doing this for a while, what is it specifically about cybersecurity that resonates the most with you?
Well, I think when people think of security and cybersecurity, they think of the guy in the basement with the hoodie. And cybersecurity is not that. It really isn't. There are so many factors and aspects of cybersecurity. And really, there's a place for practically anyone in all different realms, whether it being on the coding side or the business aspect side or in the business development side. There are just so many areas that cybersecurity needs leaders in. And interestingly enough, as my career progressed and really met some really fascinating people in the space, their backgrounds come from all sorts of areas, whether it being the FBI, whether it being philosophy majors, history majors, all sorts of areas, psychology, business, really any type of field where there's a passion behind it.
Shira, you clearly have a passion for cybersecurity. Do you feel at this point you're at the top of your game?
I don't think anyone can feel that they're at the top of their game. I always look at where else can I improve? Where can I grow? How can I add to? Where can I be a factor in the space that is helpful, but also that makes a difference? I look to the organizations that I get involved in that make differences, that really stand apart from others. Cybersecurity was a heavily male-dominated field, but I have to point to massive amounts of really talented women in the space that have pioneered and have broken that glass ceiling along as well. The industry certainly has shifted over the last number of years, and you'll see women highlighted, but also the openings and the push to have more women enter the field of cybersecurity. And there certainly are organizations that now have certain criteria that they have to hire women who fit the bill. Obviously, not just hire a woman, but give the opportunities for women to have that ability to be part of these organizations. And there's a lot of men in industry who, in the past, it hasn't been this way, who are big proponents of having women leaders.
That's fascinating and encouraging to hear, because I think most people would assume cybersecurity is still a male-dominated industry. But for you, as one of the trailblazers, before things started to change, what unique problems did you face as a woman?
Even starting off in my career and being a founder and presence of companies and having to grow through it and going to a conference and being one of 10 women where there's 500 men or thousands of men and 100 women. Obviously, the numbers are very skewed to be heavily on the male sector. Earlier on in my career in the early 2000s, you know, I was finding my voice, and I know that's one of the things you want to talk about, but finding my voice, finding my place in this space and having to almost break free. I went early on in my career and took golf lessons because it turned out that all these security conferences started off with a golf outing. And I had knew nothing about golf. And I could say it's good that they play a scramble. My golf game is still not that great. But and my golf teacher said that I paid his mortgage for the first year based on my lessons. Yeah. But it actually helped me. I had to be part of the group. I had to not differentiate myself or play, you know, just be who I am. And I didn't want to be the woman in the group. I wanted to be the expert in the area where I shined. So I did not want to say, well, I'm not doing this because it's all men playing. I had to get up and learn and rise to the occasion to be at the table and have my voice heard.
I know also that you're a mentor for women in the field. Why do you find that so important to you?
Well, we say in industry, you know, rise, lift as you rise. I've been very lucky in my career where I had some wonderful mentors, both male and female, who took me under their wing in some different aspects and gave me opportunities for me to shine, not handing me anything, but letting my voice be heard where I might not have had that opportunity before. And I do believe in any industry, and certainly in life, it's important to lift others when you have that platform and you have the ability to have your voice heard. So I find it very important to do that. I have three daughters of my own, and I want them to have all the opportunities that they want in the world and have others look to them, you know, and give them the opportunities as well. So I think you reap what you sow. So always better to be that person who helps others.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in paying it forward. It's the only thing that fulfills you with meaning and purpose.
Agreed.
Definitely.
Yes.
So Shira, so I know helped start many businesses. And I'm curious, when people approach you for advice about if they should start a business, even if they don't have the money, what do you usually tell them?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are budding entrepreneurs, but are afraid and don't know the right steps. So one of the best ways that companies can be started and are started on stealth mode, let's call it, no capital, but what do? So find partners that have different backgrounds and different strengths that you'll need. For example, a strong business leader will run the business part, but get a strong CTO who is your business partner or a CIO who can actually do, let's say, for example, in technology. Let's say you have this wonderful artificial intelligence business you want to start. Find yourself a business partner who's proficient in coding that you trust. So number one is find someone you trust, as well as somebody who has the skill set that is needed to at least create the beta of what you're trying to do. You should have a very clear business plan of what you're trying to achieve, why you want to achieve it, what size of the market is out there, because you're going to have to eventually raise money for this business to get it off the ground and attract people to want to work there. So you certainly have to do your homework around the different areas of it.
That's great advice. I heard also that you're going around, as you were saying before, going around doing keynote speaking. How is that experience for you?
Well, it's been amazing. I actually just accepted a keynote in Saudi Arabia for the biggest cybersecurity conference in the Middle East called the Hack in November. Very excited to make my standpoint there. I've done some work over in Dubai in the last number of months, been around to South Africa, to Europe, Canada, and around the U.S., you know, it's been interesting. I think early on in my career, they were looking for a woman who actually knew what they were talking about, but they needed to have a woman speaker. And, you know, obviously everyone had to be at the right level to be chosen. But now I think it's really, it has shifted and the element has shifted. And they're looking for the opportunity to get the right people in front of the place. And of course, give those opportunities to let the people shine, men, women, or other.
I think that's really cool that in Saudi Arabia, they're looking for a woman expert in cybersecurity. So that's great. That's also great to hear that evolution. And I also know you wrote a book called Cyber Minds. Maybe you tell us a little bit about that.
Cyber Minds was published by PAC Publishing a year ago. It's all about the component of the human factors of where the people and technology intersect. If you think about it, security technology, there's a person behind it who's creating it to either help somebody, trick somebody. There's always that human factors piece. So the beginning of my book talks about the human factors of cybersecurity, the pitfalls, insider threats, all sorts of things like that. And we cover all different topics, whether it being blockchain, Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, and trends. And I interviewed some of the top minds in the space around it about their real life experiences, but also talk around how at the end of the day, it all boils down to the human factors piece, how you have to deal with the human side. We have the people, the process, and the technology. You got the technology, you got the people. The process in the middle is the glue. You got to be able to solidify that between the people and the technology in order to create, to solve, to help, or to even attack. There has to be that process.
Right. So in other words, really getting to understand, I guess, the psychology background that you have, really getting to understand the people and their what their goals are, putting yourself in their shoes and working that way in a way?
Well, that's a little part of it, but there's also many different areas you could think about. If we talk about how the biggest data hacks happened or how the biggest breaches happened, it could be human negligence. It can be insider threat, meaning it came from within the organization, whether it's negligent or malicious. Negligent, if they're not well informed, don't have the proper training and awareness, or malicious, somebody's actually looking to cause you trouble. And the different ways you can train and solidify an organization to be stronger from within and also from the perimeter of it. This also boils down to people's everyday life and how they should behave in terms of their own personal cybersecurity.
How do you, in general, I know that's maybe a loaded question, but how do you, in general, identify a potential threat in the cybersecurity world?
I think there's a few, and I think most people are aware of something called phishing, where somebody's pretending to be somebody they're not to gain information, gain access, hurt you, steal from you, pretend to be you to do some malicious actions. There's all sorts of that via email, and they look completely proper, all sorts of things like that. Never open attachments. Now, there's also big attacks that are actually becoming even more prominent, and I think that certainly has happened way more during COVID, which is phone calls and preying on people's weakness and preying on what's important to somebody. Again, the human factors piece, something personal, and making it urgent, so making them anxious. For example, calling an elderly person and saying, your social security checks are being stopped because we think somebody's been blocked into your account. Can you just please verify it's you so we know not to lock you out of it? So there's no stop and pause there. There's the anxiousness. It's personal. They don't want their checks stopped. There's also, I've spoken to seasoned CEOs who had banks call them and say, somebody is trying to issue a check from your organization or issue a wire. It's a large one. We're calling to just make sure that it's you. So what should he do? Hang up the phone. Call the bank directly yourself. Never, ever, ever give over information over the phone. Always ask for a callback number. Verify who it is, but also go on site and find the real numbers, because I'm sure they'll be very happy to give you a fake number and have a whole team of experts who know just enough information to have you believe them.
It's interesting because I personally, in my business, my CFO received an email. He thought it was coming from me, and to send a wire to somebody else. And the language that he used in the email was exactly my language. So exactly. he proceeded to send the wire. And I spent a few months. They then took the money and transferred in many different bank accounts. And the FBI was on it. And eventually we got the funds back. But it was, they're very, very sophisticated.
One way to get around that is, of course, you know, anyone could find anything and really understand and make themselves look like they're somebody they're not. So it's important to have a process in place. If something like that were to happen, maybe the regulation would be, you cannot do anything unless you call me and ask me to call you back, right? You also want to make sure that somebody's not, you know, phobing your number. There's ways to do that as well. But to hear it and to make sure, or have a word that's a code word that only the two of you know, just to verify it should happen, because there's so many ways around it, to spoof emails, to even spoof SMSs. Somebody can get an SMS from a number from your phone that says they're you telling them to do something, but it's not you. So not to scare the audience, but the extra steps are very important.
So it's just something that I was always thinking about. Sometimes I'll be speaking with a friend or and I'll be talking about a topic and my phone's to the side and it's off.
Yeah.
But then I'll go on my, let's just say my Facebook, and there'll be an advertisement on what I was discussing. So should we assume that even though our phone's off or on the side, that somehow they're listening in and...
Voice privacy is a whole nother topic, but we could delve into it certainly. You know, everyone has also talked about Alexa. People keep it on in their house for convenience. I would say turn it off, not only mute, you know, unless you're using it. The devices are listening. You know, Google, you can go to it. It will have a log of everybody you ever spoke to, how long you spoke to them, how many times you spoke to them, and logs of everything. In terms of different email processes, they're copied, images are copied. It is listening. And you could do that test where put your phone down, talk about something random that you've never spoken about before. Wait a little while, scroll through, you'll see an advertisement pop up. So voice privacy is a whole interesting topic. And the scary part is hearing is not believing anymore. We used to say seeing is believing. And as we know now with AI technology, artificial intelligence, that can be spoofed too. Hearing, somebody could take your voice and take different recordings of it and merge it through this technology and make it sound like you said something you aren't saying. So hearing, seeing, and believing, that's a whole thing of the past. And that can be disproven in courts and all sorts of things like that. So there's many big problems that organizations and people of higher levels are facing because they're looking like they're doing things they shouldn't be.
Wow. That's mind-blowing. What advice would you give someone who wants to enter an industry and the odds are stacked against them? What would you say to that person who's listening?
I like that question. I think the first thing is do your homework. Figure out what you want to do in this industry, why it's important to you. Have those answers ready. Then do your homework around who are people that you find that you admire in an industry and why. Look a little bit about them. Find out what they're doing and what makes them passionate about it. Is there anything that aligns? Because when you reach out to somebody in the space, they're going to have the questions for you. What makes you interested in it? What do you find interesting that I did? Why did you reach out to me? How can I help you? Have all those answers ready. Do your homework so it's an easy fit for somebody to want to see you within industry and give you that extra step. Just calling and saying, you know, I've had many people reach out to me and they're looking for internships or they're looking for positions. Like, can you help me find a position? Or, you know, and, you know, get to that kind of stuff and you ask why, they'll be like, it looks cool. You know, that's not something anyone's going to spend time on. So if you're passionate about something, be able to express why. Be able to express what you feel you can do to stand apart in this industry and make a difference, because your passion will resonate with somebody who will be able to help you get to the next step. And again, it's all about lifting it as you rise. And most people are looking to do that, certainly in the ecosystem where I'm dealing.
So Shira, how can people learn more about you?
Sure. So, you know, many different ways. Certainly on LinkedIn, I'm easily found. I have a YouTube channel I actually had created a year ago during COVID just for information share. So there's lots of different interviews with some of the top CEOs, conferences, interviews I've done. It's Shira Rubinoff TV on YouTube, as well as, you know, different social platforms. And if there's any way I could help anybody and you're passionate about being in industry and there's some way I could help you, please let me know how, but please have your answers ready.
Thank you so much, Shira, for joining us in Common Denominator. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Moshe.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Common Denominator. Join me next week when I'll chat with Melissa Bernstein, the co-founder of the Melissa and Doug Toy Company. We'll talk about the imagination and creativity behind her designs and the impact her toys have had on kids for decades. Plus, Melissa will share her personal story of overcoming depression and anxiety to experience true joy. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. and we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.